Okay, computer is plugged in, ear thingies are on, recorder is going, phone is silenced. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, I got my beer, dog is by my feet, and my husband's in the other room. I, too, am ready.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, I'm Casey, and Snozwanger and Snozberry are the new nicknames for my dog. Schnauzwanger, Schnauzberry, whatever. I'm an anomaly.
I'm Anomaly, and I'm a Sue. Strike that, reverse it.
That's clever. Look at you being clever.
I try.
Well, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. First of all, we want to thank everybody who voted in the poll we talked about last time when picking our topic, because the clear winner became the Chocolate Factory debate, the Willy Wonka movie from 1971 versus Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory from 2005.
Although I'm not sure how much of a debate it's truly going to be, but I think we'll have an interesting discussion.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I know it. So, before we jump into anything, what have you been reading?
What have I been reading? I have not actually been reading a whole lot. Mostly, I've read Irredeemable, the graphic novel series by Mark Waid. That's mm-hmm. how it's pronounced, right? It's 10 graphic novels, and it is really fantastic. It's sort of, it's like if the ultimate hero turns evil. Like, the things people say about him get to him, and he can hear everything, so he knows, you know, every little jab, and it just it takes him and turns him, and it's just, it's such a fantastic story.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
I too,
that story. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I've been reading Irredeemable, too. I'm only halfway through so far, but Kevin, when I check out the graphic novels from the library, he reads comics way faster than I do. So he's already done with volumes 1 through 9.
Nice.
And that was yesterday when I got them.
Yeah, I've finished Irredeemable, and I found out that there is a like child companion series called Incorruptible that sort of goes the other way. Someone a character that was a villain when the main character of Irredeemable was a hero becomes a hero in the aftermath. So, and that's called Incorruptible, and that is next on my list.
Interesting.
But I have also been reading, I'm continuing to read, because it's taking me a long time, the Star Trek Department of Temporal Investigations book, the first one called Watching the Clock. There's a lot of time travel technobabble, and it just takes a while to get through. And I have about 40 pages left, so maybe by next time we record. No. And then, of course, I read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, that's obvious. I read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Let's see. I've been reading quite a bit, which is surprising, because I moved this past week, and we've been prepping for it for a while. And I don't know how I got as many books in as I did, but I read a few mediocre books, though. One of the books that has been recommended to me, especially through Goodreads, was Dearly Departed by Leah Habel, and I just could not get into it, and there were a few others that I'm just not going to bother to mention, but there have been standouts. Sabriel by Garth Nix, read the audiobook narrated by Tim Curry. It's really, really good, especially with Tim Curry reading to you in his Tim Curry voice. I also read probably one of my top five favorite books of the year, which is Quiet by Susan Cain. It's a nonfiction book about introverts and basically taking sociological studies as well as scientific studies. It's a woman who considers herself an introvert who used to be a lawyer but decided to finally make the change to a writer because she is so introverted, and that's one of the careers she was always attracted to because she's quieter, she likes working on her own. The loud noises and parties usually kind of overstimulate her. And honestly, I'm an introvert, and 1/3 to 1/2 of the population are introverts too. So if you don't believe you're an introvert, you might know one. This is a good book to pick up. I'm recommending it, highly, highly recommending it. And I also read a young adult book called The Pox Party, which is the first volume of The Astonishing Life of Octavian Nothing. Not genre, but it's set in the American Revolution. And it's by M.T. Anderson, by the way. And it's really interesting. I don't want to give too much away, but it's one of the first American Revolution books that really grabbed my attention. And currently I'm reading Daughter of the Forest by Juliette Marillier. And if we have listeners out there who have read The Lightning Thief, which is the first book in the Percy Jackson series, could you help me? Because I'm halfway through the book right now, and I know a lot about Greek mythology. I was all up in the encyclopedia anyway, but I loved reading about Greek myths. And the author is staying very true to Greek mythology for the most part, but it doesn't really mesh with a kid's book, and I'm not really sure how I feel about the writing, and I just need help. Can I get some encouragement of people saying that it gets better? Because right now, I don't know. And lots of people I know love this book, so encouragement would be nice.
It's funny.
I feel bad because I don't like it so far.
I have a friend who will not read the Harry Potter books because she's afraid she won't like them and then, like, feel guilty and left out of everything that's happened over the past, like, 15 years.
Anyway, since we talked about books...
Yes. Well, I guess we should start with our normal warning. If you do not know this story, if you have not seen either of these films, especially the 1971 film, mm-hmm. First of all, what is wrong with you? Secondly, you will be spoiled if you go further without seeing them.
Shields up, red alert. Spoilers decloaking off the starboard bow. Yeah, that was a warning.
So, that being said, we should jump right in. I mean, calling this the Chocolate Factory debate or the Chocolate Factory battle is, in a way, unfair because it really is no contest. It seems like pretty much everyone on the planet prefers the 1971 Gene Wilder movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, in some ways, some things to be said for the 2005 Johnny Depp movie. So I guess we'll say them.
How many things are good about the 2005 movie?
Well, the thing that most people use to support the 2005 movie is that it much more closely follows the story that is actually in the original book.
Oh, really?
Well, except for the weird backstory that is attributed to Willy Wonka himself. But the procurement of the golden ticket, even the Oompa Loompa songs are right out of the text.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, they added this weird backstory that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but for the rest of the story, it's almost directly from the original text, which is interesting if you just look at the surface, because the screenplay for the 1971 movie is attributed to Roald Dahl. However, there were massive rewrites that have sparked some rumors as well. So who knows how much of the original screenplay by Roald Dahl is actually in that 1971 film.
Yeah, because, and one of the trivia points I read is that he wasn't a fan of any of the film adaptations of his works, and especially Willy Wonka. And yet, I heard, I haven't been able to watch it myself, but there's behind-the-scenes footage of Roald Dahl on set smiling. So I don't know if it's a smile like confusion and WTF is happening to my work, or if he's really enjoying watching his fantasy, his book come to life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So maybe his mind changed between the making of the film and the completion. Who knows? But
I believe he attended the premiere.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's no way to know at this point.
Yeah. I will say that watching the 2005 movie, let's see, I'm trying to find nice ways to put it. It did take a lot of the dialogue in the book. You know, to me, Tim Burton is first and foremost an artist. He used to work for Disney. So the color palettes that he creates and the pictures that he frames in his films are always beautiful. And that, to me, is where the compliments end.
Okay. I mean, I know you are not as big a Burton fan as some people.
he has done some good things.
Yes.
But this is proof that not everything he's done is good, in my personal opinion.
I very much like the look of this movie. The biggest issues for me in the 2005 film are the weird dentist backstory that doesn't make much sense, and Johnny Depp's choices, because I do not understand what he's doing.
I think it's the worst performance he has ever done.
It's just, it might not even be his choices, it might be the direction. I don't really know at that point, but it's just, it's weird and it's uncomfortable. And maybe that's what he was going for, but I don't appreciate it.
And this is hair talking. You suck down one of these little boogers, and in exactly half an hour, a brand new crop of hair will start growing out all over the top of your little noggin. And a mustache, and a beard.
Who wants a beard?
Well, beatniks for one, folk singers and motorbike riders. You know, all those hip, jazzy, super cool, neat, keen, and groovy cats. It's in the fridge, Daddy-O. Are you hep to the job? Can you dig what I'm laying down? I knew that you could slide me some skin, so, brother.
I feel like if you cut the backstory and could somehow, like, stick in Gene Wilder into the look of the 2005 film and the progression of the story up till the end, where it goes awry, I think you'd have possibly a perfect movie. But at this point, 1971 has become so iconic and pervades our culture. Like, everyone knows what an Oompa Loompa is. Everyone quotes this movie without even really knowing it. Or knowing they're quoting the movie. I mean, not necessarily not knowing the movie, if that makes sense.
Right. And the look of the original film is so, you know, it's real. It looks real. I mean, you know, Tim Burton has a very sort of fairy tale aspect to it, but in the book, it's described that Charlie and his family live in poverty. You can believe the poverty that you see in the 1971 film rather than the 2005 film, where for some reason they're living in a slanted house and Charlie has to sleep in the attic. I can't believe that his dad works at a toothpaste factory, and that has to be some sort of decent wage. I don't know. But they wouldn't be living in a slanted house is what I'm saying. I just think that's Tim Burton saying, you know what would be cool? The entire family living in a slanted house. Just a house that looks like it's going to fall over at any minute.
Yeah.
Because that's what poverty looks like.
Let's stick them in a leftover piece from The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. Cut your darlings. Cut your darlings. And, you know, we talked about Johnny Depp's choices of acting, too. And they've worked together on so many films, Johnny Depp and Tim Burton, that I honestly believe that Tim Burton just lets Johnny Depp do whatever he wants now. I honestly, honestly believe that. And I think Tim Burton is more of a visual director than someone who drives the plot along. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't direct Nightmare Before Christmas, and that's my favorite quote-unquote Tim Burton movie. It's really just his characters and his storyline from a college project.
So it's so weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think Freddie Highmore is adorable, but when I read the book and I watched both sets of movies, mm-hmm. Charlie doesn't do anything bad in the book. He's sort of just an innocent bystander.
Right.
And he just watches everything happen.
He follows the rules.
Yes. But at the same time, I believe the 1971 version of Charlie more than I believe the Freddie Highmore version, because Freddie Highmore's version is just a saint. He's just the perfect kid. It's just, oh, we're going to share the chocolate because it's my birthday present and I believe we should share. And, oh, I have to give up my family to be in the chocolate factory? No. Candy isn't about this. It's about making people happy. We should go see your dad, Willy Wonka, and sort out your family issues. I mean, what?
It does sort of come out of nowhere. And I don't know. Well, it makes me really angry, too, when he shows up at the end of the 2005 film, because to that point, it had been so true to the story. And Charlie says, well, I want to bring my family. My family, I can't, I'm not going to move there without my family. In the book, Willy Wonka's like, of course, duh. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, this Willy Wonka hates family? And no.
More no. importantly... Like,
that doesn't make any sense.
More importantly, this Willy Wonka, despite having a contest for children to possibly take over his factory when he's gone, he doesn't like kids. What am I watching? So we're going to jump to the 1971 version as a little segue, because when you watch Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka, he at least pretends to have some interest in the kids. He greets all of them at the gate one at a time. And he says, Veruca, you're such a beautiful young girl. What a beautiful mink coat you have. And Augustus Gloop, you've got a sturdy body on you. And he plays along with Mike TV when he whips out his toy gun and says, bang. And it's I can't think about the Tim Burton version anymore.
Then let's not.
Yay. I'm sure we'll think about it more. It's just that right now I want to think about happy things.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Does it say anything about the movies, other than that they needed to distinguish them, that they changed the name for the 1971 to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory instead of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because I think, in my opinion, as someone who watches a bunch of movies and has paid attention to some marketing and PR stuff, it makes more sense for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory to be a title because it's more catchy, it's unique, whereas Charlie and the Chocolate Factory just kind of sounds run-of-the-mill. But at the same time, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the title of the book, so I don't know. So what's your background with the 1971 film? Because obviously, we didn't grow up with the 2005 version.
No. What is my background with the film? Jeez. It's always sort of been part of my consciousness, I guess. I mean, it was just there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will admit, though, when I watched it again before we recorded, I had basically forgotten, like, the first 40 minutes of the movie. There is so much that goes on that just I did not remember. Like, I knew the story, and he finds the chocolate bar, it's the one he buys at the store, whatever. But you meet Willy Wonka halfway through the movie. It's like 45 minutes in. In mm-hmm. my brain, it was definitely like 5 minutes. So it was, at least the first 45 minutes were like a renewed experience for me.
That's awesome.
I know, it's terrible, right?
It was like it was a different movie.
I mean, as I was watching it, it came flooding back. But, like, the I've Got a Golden Ticket song, the Cheer Up Charlie, if you had asked me about those before watching it, I wouldn't have come up with them. It's just not there.
You forgot about Golden Ticket?
Yeah. I it's been a while.
You're an awful person.
It's true.
The movie was always on at my house, too. It was that movie that I grew up with. In fact, I think I've seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory more than I've seen The Wizard of Oz.
That's another movie I didn't see till high school.
I mean, I saw Wizard of Oz when I was young, and, you know, it was on occasionally, but my thing was Willy Wonka. You know, we had it on VHS, but whenever it was on a TV channel, we were watching it. And I always ended up defending the movie to people who would naysay it. It's just like, oh, that tunnel scene is so creepy. And I'm just like, no, it's not. You're creepy.
The tunnel scene is kind of creepy.
I actually, there was a space of time when I didn't watch the movie when I was young. And I thought, oh, I'm going to pop this in. It'll be fun to watch this movie again after however few years I hadn't watched it. So I put it in. And I was watching it with fresh eyes, and it got to the tunnel scene, and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. Because they're getting away with so much in a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. And the song that Willy Wonka is singing in the tunnel is directly from the book, too. Mm-hmm. And I didn't remember that until I reread it after however many, like 15 to 20 years after not reading it. And quick anecdote, I tried to put in a hold on two different copies of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They were on hold for a month, and this was, like, this past weekend. And I thought, okay, I'm not a believer in signs or anything, but I obviously have to buy this movie now. So we got it from the Half Price, my husband and I, and we came back to our new apartment, and I sat down and I watched it with the little tiny cup of champagne. And before I even started sipping the champagne, the overture started playing, and I started crying.
Oh.
And as I'm watching it, I'm just like, is this what nostalgia really is? Sadness for a childhood you can't return to?
Pretty much.
I love this movie. It was amazing, the effect. The emotional effect that it had on me. And I laughed at parts I hadn't laughed at in years because we don't have a VCR. VHSs are irrelevant. And more importantly, I couldn't find the VHS of Willy Wonka, which breaks my little heart. But I'm glad I own the DVD now because it is possibly one of my favorite movies ever.
Speaking of overtures, I'm digressing a little bit, I guess. But since we're us, I feel like it's appropriate to mention that they are also turning Charlie and the Chocolate Factory into a stage musical.
Yeah, I saw that.
Currently performing in London's West End, and I'm sure on its way to Broadway, basically following in the footsteps of Matilda. And mm-hmm. I believe it's also the same creative team. I have not heard much about it yet, but it will certainly be interesting.
We'll see. I'm excited for the main actor who's playing Willy Wonka. Douglas Hodge, I believe.
I love Douglas Hodge.
From what little I've seen him, he's really good.
He's wonderful. He's won a couple of Tonys recently. Maybe just one.
I think it's just the one. But I'm fascinated by Roald Dahl adaptations in general, because I said this briefly about Neil Gaiman in a previous podcast, but between Roald Dahl and Neil Gaiman, I think they are our modern day fairy tale writers. They are setting up these very classic stories that have that Brothers Grimm, Hans Christian Andersen sort of feel to them. And they're becoming timeless. And more importantly, the stories that they write that are like this feature children. They all feature children in very important roles. So,
and they don't talk down to children.
Not at all.
It's sort of the same thing that we have said previously about Jim Henson Productions. You don't talk down to children.
And we'll get to the kids in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in a little bit, but I think of Matilda. And I listened to one of the songs recently, Naughty, which is the musical is by Tim Minchin, who is a musical comedian, but he wrote a song called Naughty for the musical Matilda, and she basically says, you mustn't let a little thing like little stop you, and you can change your story.
Even if you're little, you can do a lot. You mustn't let a little thing like little stop you. I've clearly listened to this quite mm-hmm. a lot. I am in love with that show.
And going forward to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Charlie is the only kid who is an honest, good-hearted kid.
That is why the fizzy lifting drink scene has always irked me. Like, I understand that the final test in the 1971 movie is that even though Willy Wonka kicks him out, he gives back the gobstopper and he's not going to tell Slugworth about it, blah, 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 blah. But he still broke the rules. The point of him winning in the book is that he didn't break the rules. So it's always annoyed me. It seems kind of two-faced, maybe? Just because the Oompa Loompas didn't have to squeeze him or save him or wring the chocolate out of him, and he made it back to the tour group, he's not in trouble?
Well, to me, the reason why he didn't, quote-unquote, get in trouble is because he is a good kid, but he's flawed because he's a little boy. Little boys, you know, you get to see the gamut of emotion from him throughout the movie. He has low self-esteem. He is not perfect. And he's curious. He wants to know how the fizzy lifting drinks work. And he's with his grandpa. And when is his grandpa ever going to do anything? I mean, he just got up out of the bed for the first time in 20 years so that he could go with Charlie to the Chocolate Factory.
Well, that's true. I just... It has always left me a little bit weird, I guess, that he misbehaved just like everyone else, but for some reason he wins.
But you also get to see the reality of the naughty kids, too. Let's talk about them.
Right, because it's like any good fairy tale mm-hmm. has a moral, I suppose. Maybe with Charlie it's that you accept responsibility for what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm unclear. But anyway, you've got Augustus Gloop, who is your glutton.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Violet Beauregard, who chews gum all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There is Veruca Salt, who's greedy. And there is Mike TV, who, by all descriptions, watches too much television, but is always portrayed with guns and in the 2005 movie with video games.
Yeah, I want to talk about those changes real quick, too, because the biggest changes to the kids, because you can't change Augustus and Veruca that much at all, mm-hmm. but with Violet and Mike TV, they did change their characters a lot. In the book, it mentions that Violet is obnoxious, mainly with the gum chewing, but in the movie, the 1971 movie, she's loud, she talks over her dad, she's very sassy, and she is just telling other people, "Can it, you nit?" Which is one of my favorite lines in the movie. It's when she tells Veruca to shut up.
Hey, Daddy, I want an Oompa Loompa. I want you to get me an Oompa Loompa right away.
All right, Veruca, all right. I'll get you one before the day's out.
I want an Oompa Loompa now!
Can it, you nit?
And Mike, you know, you could argue that in the 1971 version, TV was the thing that a lot of people were just like, oh, so much violence. But then you get to the 2005 version, and Violet is chewing gum because she's a competitor? That's weird. And I can kind of understand the change of Mike TV from TV to video games, but it just didn't work for me.
Well, it gives me two different messages. The movies, both of them. Well, even the book, too, because he's described as being covered in guns, sort of tells you that television makes children violent, because that's everything that's on television. Which, mm-hmm. of course, now the argument that people are having is video games make children violent.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. But also, in his departure song in the book, is the idea that all of this quote-unquote mindless entertainment prevents a child from developing their imagination, which is a different message entirely, but also an important one. You know, I have blogged about this on our blog, that if you watch the right television, I don't necessarily agree with, but there is plenty of mindless television available.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, I watch some of that mindless television. America's Next Top Model? Anybody?
Oh, yes.
I also didn't like Mike TV not liking chocolate in the new movie. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Why is everything here completely pointless?
Candy doesn't have to have a point. That's why it's candy.
It's stupid!
I just did it because I wanted to win. That sounded more like the change they made for Violet than the change they made for What's-His-Face.
Right, I think that was supposed to be a video game thing. Like, you give me this set of variables, and of course I can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But, whatever.
Whatever. It was stupid. It was stupid, Tim Burton and John August.
It's interesting, you were... obviously, there are other vices and other things that can be a problem with children.
mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting that you were one of the questions asking words on Facebook and Twitter and social media was, which of the kids are you?
Yeah. I mean, you obviously can't say you're more like Charlie because we all have our faults. And I think it's more interesting for you to admit what those faults are rather than say, oh, I associate myself more with Willy Wonka. I'm quirky and I like top hats.
Right. Check and check. And I think it's interesting to say which one, because I guess they're intended to be parts of a character. You know, different aspects. Because I definitely watch a ton of television, but I'm also a gum chewer. And who at times is not kind of selfish and impatient. You know, there are times, I think, when we're all of them.
Yeah, I definitely grew up as a Mike TV. I think that's still the kid I associate with the most. Because I, because TV was a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are times when I like to eat my emotions, too. I love cake. If you try to get in my way towards cake or pie, I will beat you. I would probably fall in the chocolate river, I'm not going to lie. I am proud to say I'm not Veruca Salt. That's comforting.
Ever? You're not ever Veruca Salt?
I'm maybe like a tinge of Veruca Salt. But, you know, I was donating all of my stuff for the move.
Right.
So that we could have less stuff.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily all the time. But there are definitely certain things where you know, you can get a little bit like Veruca. Mm-hmm. You know, if for me right now, it is the limited edition Muppet Star Wars figures that are being released at the Disney parks.
Yes, goodness.
But whenever a new set is released, I want it, and I want it now.
But that's fair.
It's, you know, the rare instance where the thing that you have that reaction to is not necessarily the most important. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly more important things in your life and possibly better things you could be spending money on. But right. You want it, and you want it now.
I am a lot like Violet Beauregard in the 1971 movie, too, because I mean, you heard in the Star Trek Into Darkness review, Angela told me to bring it down. And that's just my natural volume. I'm a loud talker. And I can imagine myself being on TV and going, hey, look at this, and pull my gum down and then let it go to see how far it flies up. At least when I was 12, I would do that. You know, I would probably do that at age 27. I don't care. People do that on YouTube all the time. I also had another question that I didn't get to ask on the Facebook group, but I asked my husband last night because I was prepping for the podcast, what little prepping I do, and I asked him, did any of the kids deserve what they got? And he said no, but their parents did.
Hmm.
Which I find interesting.
It is interesting. The only, from what I remember, the book, the only goodbye song that blames the parents is Mike TV's.
Oh no, it was also Veruca Salt.
Was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have already returned the book to the library, so I could not double check that. But I mean, yeah. we get into dangerous waters, I guess, talking about that topic. But mm-hmm. for the most part, when kids are that young, it's basically true that their behavior is learned behavior from the people, the adults that they see the most, who happen to be their parents.
And you can see that in the movies, too. And I'll credit both movies for this, mm-hmm. because especially Veruca Salt, the one that stands out to me is Roy Kinnear, who plays Veruca Salt's dad in the 1971 version, because he is like this close to having a breakdown if he does not fulfill his daughter's needs. And I think one of the reasons people spoil their child is that they're afraid to see them upset. They're afraid of a public tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that fear with him because of that. He wants to coddle her, and you can see her bossing him around.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, she's sitting in the office chair spinning and throwing papers.
They're not even trying. They don't want to find it. They're jealous of me.
Sweetheart, I can't push them no harder. 19,000 bars an hour they're shelling. 760,000 they've done so far.
You promised, Daddy. You promised I'd have it the very first day.
You're going to be very unpopular around here, Henry, if you don't deliver soon.
It breaks my heart, Henrietta. I hate to see her unhappy.
I won't talk to you ever again. You're a rotten, mean father. You never give me anything I want. And I won't go to school till I have it.
Veruca, sweetheart, angel. Now, there are only 4 tickets left in the whole world, and the whole ruddy world's hunting for them. What can I do?
I will say, my favorite parent, though, is the woman who played Augustus's mom in the 1971 version, where she's like, Augustus, sweetheart, save some room for later. It's magic. magic. And you boiled him up. I know it.
Augustus-flavored chocolate-covered gloop?
Not good.
No.
Would not taste yummy.
I am backtracking a little bit. As much as we harp on Johnny Depp's performance, I think the opposite is true for Gene Wilder. I mean, he's just perfection in this role. As I was reading the text of the book, the parts that transferred directly to the movie, I was just couldn't help but think of how he plays it and how he reads the lines, especially whenever the children aren't listening to him and he's telling them, no, stop, and he does it so sarcastically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, come back. It's just, it's brilliant.
Don't just stand there. Do something.
Help. Police. Murder.
Violet, now don't you do anything stupid.
What's it taste like? Dad, it's tomato soup. It's hot and creamy. I can actually feel it running down my throat.
Stop. Don't.
Look at me. I'm going to be the first person in the world to be sent by television.
Hey, get away from that thing.
Stop. Don't. Come back.
Don't just stand there. Do something. Help. Police. Murder.
It's just, it's wonderful. And, I mean, it's a relatively well-known story by now, I think. But Gene Wilder agreed to do this movie on the condition that he would be able to shoot his introduction scene the way he wanted, where he would come out hobbling and then stick the cane in the wood and then somersault. And when asked why, he said that it sets the tone for the character. You portray him as someone whose actions are completely unpredictable and you can never know when he's lying or telling the truth.
I love Gene Wilder. I really do. And just thinking about his performance in that movie, I honestly think he should have had some sort of award nomination, like Academy Award. He should at least get an honorary one, like right now.
The Anomaly Award?
He gets the Anomaly Award for best actor in a Willy Wonka role ever.
Well, that would not be much of a contest.
Yeah. Oh, well, there have been a few people who have played Willy Wonka so far now. I mean, between Douglas Hodge and Johnny Depp, at least there's some competition in Douglas Hodge.
Perhaps. We'll see.
What I love about Gene Wilder's performance as Willy Wonka is that he's an adult. He's an adult who is a little childlike, but he's not a man child. He's got this whimsy to him. He's eccentric, but he also has a wisdom to him. There's a passion and an anger hidden. But what I've noticed about all of the things I've seen Gene Wilder in is that there's just a twinge of sadness if you really pay attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Pure Imagination. Like, whenever I watch that scene, it seems like, to me, it's as if he's saying goodbye to the factory because he knows what the contest is for, because he's getting older and he's going to have to let that go at some point. It breaks my heart.
It's just perfection.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
How did you like the chocolate factory, Charlie?
I think it's the most wonderful place in the whole world.
I'm very pleased to hear you say that, because I'm giving it to you. That's all right, isn't it?
You're giving Charlie the...
I can't go on forever, and I don't really want to try. So who can I trust to run the factory when I leave and take care of the Oompa Loompas for me? Not a grown-up. A grown-up would want to do everything his own way, not mine. That's why I decided a long time ago that I had to find a child. A very honest, loving child to whom I can tell all my most precious candy-making secrets.
And that's why you sent out the golden tickets.
That's right. So the factory's yours, Charlie. You can move in immediately.
And me?
Absolutely.
What happens to the
rest? The whole family. I want you to bring them all.
Love that movie. So good. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, when I was in high Was I in high school when I found out? Yeah, it was the year I graduated from high school. When I found out that Tim Burton was doing a version, I was excited. And I was looking forward to a new take on one of my favorite stories ever. And I thought that Tim Burton would bring a quirkiness to it. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I think with lots of those remakes, for a remake of anything you love has the potential to be awesome or the potential to disappoint you greatly. And it, at least in my experience, very rarely falls in between.
Let's read some comments, actually, so that we can get a little more into this, too. Thank you to everybody for your comments, by the way. And I think they are varied in style, but not so much in opinion.
So, first, do I need to phrase this?
You can phrase it however you want to.
So, basically, the question was, which of the two movies do you prefer, and which of the children do you identify with? Which of the naughty children do you identify with? David says, even though the Gene Wilder version is a bit afield of the Roald Dahl book, I prefer it. Not sure if it's prejudice to Gene's Willy Wonka being the first adaptation I saw, or if it's I just couldn't stand Johnny Depp's interpretation of the character. No disrespect for Mr. Depp's talent, but damn, he made me queasy with this one. Gene Wilder's take was softer and easier. To be truthful, easier for me to believe both then at 12 and now at 54. I related to Mike more than the rest. As one of the first generation to have known about the world without TV, I could understand his love and obsession with it. If I myself had ever had the mouth on me that any of the naughty kids had, though, I'm sure I'd have never made it past my 12th birthday with all of my teeth in my head. That would have never gone over in our house.
Timothy says that David nailed it. Johnny Depp did everything that was asked of him. It's just that what was asked of him was written more like a reimagining of Willy Wonka, one that was hip and cool, and it completely missed the mark. It was quirky, but in a very uncomfortable, not really fun kind of way. It was devoid of the underlying sense of decency and warmth that Gene Wilder's Wonka brought with even a simple look. Technically, the Depp version was to the letter more accurate, as a whole it seems, to have followed the book more closely. But apparently, getting the feel is so critical that when it is not there, all the accuracy in the world can't make up for it. And we got a controversial one from Eric. Eric kind of stands out.
Eric says, I'll take the version with the Danny Elfman soundtrack, so Charlie for me. The Willy Wonka version has the bit where Charlie sneaks off, which doesn't allow him to be clearly set apart from the misbehaving kids. However, the Charlie version goes to insane origin story detail, which, while interesting, doesn't move the story in any meaningful way. But then, Christopher Lee is so good at it, I can overlook it.
Candy is a waste of time. No son of mine is going to be a chocolatier.
Then I'll run away. To Switzerland, Bavaria, the candy capitals of the world.
Go ahead. But I won't be here when you come back.
Who am I? Definitely Mike TV. Ultraviolent video games. FTW.
And Sarah, our co-host and co-staff member for Anomaly, says, part of my love for the Gene Wilder version stems from the fact that I grew up with it, and partly because I think Gene Wilder is a genius. So I could be saying all this through nostalgia-colored glasses, but I definitely prefer the Gene Wilder one. I am a huge fan of Roald Dahl, and feel like the version was truer to the spirit of it. Oh, and I'm definitely Mike TV. Living in a dream world, I'm watching too much television.
Our good buddy Rick Moyer says that he will try and get a comment in today. We have not received that yet, Mr. Moyer. But then says, I prefer Willy Wonka hands down. Brilliant music, cool characters, and missing a spastic pirate goofball?
He means Johnny Depp.
Ha ha
ha. Double jab. Gareth says, Willy Wonka. There is no other version.
Hi there, this is Rick Moyer. Well,
I have to say, ladies, that you are covering one of the coolest shows that I can remember from childhood. Now, I don't like the newfangled Chocolate Factory one. I just like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder. All the amazing cast. It just takes me back to when I was a kid and the magical world that they created in that movie. The chance of winning the golden ticket and the actors that were so awesome in the show. I'll never forget it. And still to this day when I watch it, it just, I don't know, I tear up and I love it. It's so nostalgic for me. A movie that has just about everything I like in it. So I'm going to sing part of the song for you. Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in a world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. I'll never forget how he danced around that room of candy, and all I could think was, oh, that would be such a cool place to visit. And the music was enchanting. It was just delightful. Now, the newfangled version, I didn't like the music really at all. This, I think more, though, it's just a callback to childhood and the fact that I saw it on a little screen that was all fuzzy and kind of color. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do, do it. Want to change the world, there's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. There you go. I thought I would be nostalgic and sing the song. Now, my voice doesn't lend itself to it so great, but I thought I would try anyway. I love that movie so much, and so much more than the newer version, you know. Johnny Depp, he did an okay job, but he's kind of like a, well, not that Willy Wonka wasn't a psycho, but I don't know. I just didn't like the way that he portrayed him. Gene Wilder, amazing performance. I think what I really enjoyed about this particular movie, the older version of it, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I really liked the fact that it was almost like a stage show brought to life. In other words, the props and the scenery and everything else, it was obviously, overdone. There wasn't really a whole lot of special effects, and it was more like watching a stage show and a musical. And I love that. I don't know. It just was. very appealing, and I could watch it over and over and over, and just very, very cool stuff. So, and of course, the comedy in it with the guy from Monty Python and everything, just hilarious. The whole thing was great. Searching for the golden ticket. I've got the golden ticket. Love it. So thanks for reviewing it and talking about it. Love, love, love it. And I hope you guys have a great day. This is Rick Moyer from the West Coast saying thanks, everybody. I love Anomaly.
Let's go to the Twitter. We only got two comments from Twitter. The Wiggly Tendrils at Wiggly Tendrils. I love that name. says Gene Wilder, exclamation point.
And Edward at EdwardGerman3 says, I never read the book, but I like Gene Wilder as Wonka.
So
there's really not much of a debate, as we said.
Yeah. But my big question is, do we like the Gene Wilder version because we grew up on it and we're so, you know, attached to it? I mean, I just told you guys that I cried while watching this movie after years of not watching it. And everyone who mentioned the Gene Wilder version said that they grew up on it. Would it be any different if kids grew up on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Tim Burton version? And does your opinion change if you read the book before or after the movie? Or is it just a question of acting? Are you more drawn towards Gene Wilder as Wonka for his quiet yet somewhat deranged performance? Or are you more attracted to Johnny Depp's weird, really deranged Wonka?
Wow. That's a lot of questions.
I have a lot of them.
Honestly, I'm not sure that there are going to be too many kids raised on the Johnny Depp version because the Gene Wilder version is so iconic. Even if you don't know all the songs, you know the songs. You know Pure Imagination, and you know the Oompa Loompa songs, and you know the jokes, and you're just so familiar with it. I think that parents are going to show their children the movie they love, and it's still the one that's on TV. And it's still the one that people talk about. And I feel like the remake is going to maybe fade away.
Yeah. Which, you know, for people who prefer the Tim Burton version, and there are people out there. Eric is one of them. He loves the Danny Elfman music. But, I mean, even without my bias towards it, which is hard to say because I'm extremely biased towards Willy Wonka, Charlie is just a flawed film. There are a lot of things wrong with it. Like, if you look past, you know, the colorful exterior, and it's beautiful, don't get me wrong. If you look at the story and the added storyline with Willy Wonka's dad and all of that, it just doesn't flow very well. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I don't think a lot of kids are going to relate to Freddie Highmore as Charlie. I think if they brought more of Freddie Highmore's performance from Finding Neverland into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I would probably say different things about it. Maybe. I would probably have more compliments to give it. I don't know.
It's hard to say. I mean, the 2005, while it's ridiculous that that's 8 years ago, mm-hmm. in the other scheme of things, it's only 8 years ago. And you know, what age would you be seeing that movie? 11, 12? We should find some, like, 18 to 20-year-olds and ask them their thoughts on it.
Maybe.
Because I think a lot of what we love, and a lot, honestly, of what we have talked about in Anomaly Supplemental are things that we love and have nostalgic feelings for. I mean, we are probably not necessarily fairly judging the 2005 film, but that's what it gets.
If you are one of those people who really loves Charlie and the Chocolate Factory more than you love the Willy Wonka version, send us an email or tweet us. We'd love to hear your opinion because we definitely didn't really get a lot of variation in the comments. But you know, I'm not gonna lie. I was happy to see that the Gene Wilder version holds up so well with so many members of the community.
It feels a little weird that we didn't really do analysis of this story. We're just kind of talking about the two different versions.
Well, I honestly don't think you have to do a lot of analysis with the story because it's, you know, for the most part, it's all there on the surface.
It's true.
If you're a naughty kid, you're going to have an Oompa Loompa song about you. And if you're a good kid, you get a chocolate factory. Yay!
Yes, that is the moral of the story. Don't misbehave. Get a chocolate factory.
Exactly.
I must have been a terrible kid.
I know.
Oompa Loompa, doompa-dee-da. If you're not greedy, you will go far. You will live in happiness too. Like the Oompa Loompa, doompa-dee-doo.
So, what's next for Anomaly Supplemental?
Anomaly Supplemental? It seems the other topic that everybody seemed to really be interested in was the concept of why horror is appealing, and just discussing that idea. But we know that Jen and Angela plan to talk with Meds and Kel of Waffle On, or maybe just Meds.
Mm-hmm.
About Dracula. So we want to try and sync that up. We will definitely be talking about it.
Yeah, that one was a close one. And next time on Anomaly Supplemental, we plan on a topic around superheroes. It's still early stages of development, but we will keep you guys updated on Facebook, Twitter, and other anomalous things. So your typical wrap-up spiel. If you want to send us a comment, not just about future episodes, but also past episodes, you can email us at moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @AnomalyPodcast and find our Facebook group. I'm sure I already said that. You can go to our official website at AnomalyPodcast.com.
Of this is in the closer, right?
Yes. But you know what isn't in the closer? Visit our Anomaly store where you can get Anomaly swag such as t-shirts, household items, and more.
Coffee cups.
Ooh, tankards of doom.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we have anything else to say?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, that's it for us. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental. Oh, ghost barky.
All the cool kids are crazy and impassioned.
He was so good.
Right down to the last explosive ounce.
Probably because it's been so hot outside.
I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks@gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the @ A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's AnomalyPodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at MarionCall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I
alert since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still feel geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
Well, I can trust Canadian meds. I doubt that.
I too doubt that I can trust Canadian meds.
How hilarious would it be if meds were Canadian? It's like alternate universe Spock, Canadian meds.
Except he would be even nicer than meds. He would love all the doctors.
So actual meds is evil meds?
It's possible. You never know. Sometimes I wonder if I'm the evil version of myself in a parallel universe.
Audio clips used in this podcast are from the 1971 Mel Stewart film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, as well as the 2005 Tim Burton film Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Both films were released on DVD by Warner Home Video and are used solely for the purpose of commentary. To purchase these films, visit Amazon.com, iTunes, or your local retailer.